Chapter 99. There was an old Roman bath in those days at the bottom of one of the streets out of the Strand that may be there still, in which I have had many a cold plunge. Dressing myself as quietly as I could, and leaving Peggotty to look after my aunt, I tumbled head foremost into it, and then went for a walk to Hampstead. I had a hope that this brisk treatment might freshen my wits a little, and I think it did them good, for I soon came to the conclusion that the first step I ought to take was to try if my articles could be cancelled and the premium recovered. I got some breakfast on the heath, and walked back to Doctor's Commons, along the watered roads, and through a pleasant smell of summer flowers, growing in gardens and carried into town on hucksters' heads, intent on this first effort to meet our altered circumstances. I arrived at the office so soon, after all, that I had half an hour's loitering about the commons, before old Tiffy, who was always first, appeared with his key. Then I sat down in my shady corner, looking up at the sunlight on the opposite chimney pots, and thinking about Dora, until Mr. Spenlow came in, crisp and curly. "How are you, Copperfield?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said he. "Fine morning." "Apostrophe, beautiful morning, sir, apostrophe," said one. "Could I say a word to you before you go into court?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, by all means, apostrophe," said he. "Come into my room." Apostrophe, I followed him into his room, and he began putting on his gown, and touching himself up before a little glass he had, hanging inside a closet door. "I am sorry to say, apostrophe," said I, "that I have some rather disheartening intelligence from my aunt." "Apostrophe, no." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said he. "Dear me. Not paralysis, I hope?" "Apostrophe, it has no reference to her health, sir, apostrophe," I replied. "She has met with some large losses. In fact, she has very little left, indeed." "Apostrophe, you has downed me, Copperfield." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried Mr. Spenlow. I shook my head. "Indeed, sir, apostrophe," said I, "her affairs are so changed, that I wished to ask you, whether it would be possible at a sacrifice on our part of some portion of the premium." "Of course, apostrophe," I put in this, on the spur of the moment, warned by the blank expression of his face to cancel my articles. "Apostrophe, apostrophe, what it cost me to make this proposal, nobody knows. It was like asking, as a favor, to be sentenced to transportation from Dora." "To cancel your articles, Copperfield?" "Cancel?" Apostrophe, I explained with tolerable firmness, that I really did not know where my means of subsistence were to come from, unless I could earn them for myself. I had no fear for the future, I said, and I laid great emphasis on that, as if to imply that I should still be decidedly eligible for a son-in-law one of these days, but, for the present, I was thrown upon my own resources. "I am extremely sorry to hear this, Copperfield," apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow. "Extremely sorry. It is not usual to cancel articles for any such reason. It is not a professional course of proceeding. It is not a convenient precedent at all. Far from it. At the same time, apostrophe, you are very good, sir, apostrophe," I murmured, anticipating a concession. "Not at all. Don't mention it, apostrophe," said Mr. Spenlow. "At the same time, I was going to say, if it had been my lot to have my hands unfettered, if I had not a partner, Mr. Jorkins, apostrophe, my hopes were dashed in a moment, but I made another effort." "Do you think, sir, apostrophe," said I, "if I were to mention it to Mr. Jorkins, apostrophe?" Mr. Spenlow shook his head discouragingly. "Heaven forbid, Copperfield, apostrophe," he replied, "that I should do any man an injustice. Still less, Mr. Jorkins. But I know my partner, Copperfield. Mr. Jorkins is not a man to respond to a proposition of this peculiar nature. Mr. Jorkins is very difficult to move from the beaten track. You know what he is." Apostrophe, I am sure I knew nothing about him, except that he had originally been alone in the business, and now lived by himself in a house near Montagu Square, which was fearfully in want of painting, that he came very late of a day, and went away very early, that he never appeared to be consulted about anything, and that he had a dingy little black hole of his own upstairs, where no business was ever done, and where there was a yellow old cartridge paper pad upon his desk, unsoiled by ink, and reported to be 20 years of age. Would you object to my mentioning it to him, sir? ? I asked. By no means, ? said Mr. Spenlow. But I have some experience of Mr. Jorkins, Copperfield. I wish it were otherwise, for I should be happy to meet your views in any respect. I cannot have the objection to your mentioning it to Mr. Jorkins, Copperfield, if you think it worthwhile. ? Availing myself of this permission, which was given with a warm shake of the hand, I sat thinking about Dora, and looking at the sunlight stealing from the chimney pots down the wall of the opposite house, until Mr. Jorkins came. I then went up to Mr. Jorkins' room, and evidently astonished Mr. Jorkins very much, by making my appearance there. Come in, Mr. Copperfield, ? said Mr. Jorkins. Come in. I went in, and sat down, and stated my case to Mr. Jorkins pretty much as I had stated it to Mr. Spenlow. Mr. Jorkins was not by any means the awful creature one might have expected, but a large, mild, smooth-faced man of 60, who took so much snuff, that there was a tradition in the commons, that he lived principally on that stimulant, having little room in his system for any other article of diet. You have mentioned this to Mr. Spenlow, I suppose? ? said Mr. Jorkins, when he had heard me, very restlessly, to an end. I answered yes, and told him that Mr. Spenlow had introduced his name. He said I should object? ? asked Mr. Jorkins. I was obliged to admit that Mr. Spenlow had considered it probable. I am sorry to say, Mr. Copperfield, I can't advance your object, ? said Mr. Jorkins, nervously. The fact is but I have an appointment at the bank, if you'll have the goodness to excuse me. With that he rose in a great hurry, and was going out of the room, when I made bold to say that I feared, then, there was no way of arranging the matter? No. ? said Mr. Jorkins, stopping at the door to shake his head. Oh, no. I object, you know, ? which he said very rapidly, and went out. You must be aware, Mr. Copperfield, ? he added, looking restlessly in at the door again, if Mr. Spenlow objects ? personally, he does not object, sir, ? said one. Oh, personally. ? repeated Mr. Jorkins, in an impatient manner. I assure you there's an objection, Mr. Copperfield. Hopeless. What you wish to be done, can't be done. I really have got an appointment at the bank. With that he fairly ran away, and to the best of my knowledge, it was 3 days, before he showed himself in the commons again. Being very anxious to leave no stone unturned, I waited until Mr. Spenlow came in, and then described what had passed, giving him to understand that I was not hopeless of his being able to soften the adamantine Jorkins, if he would undertake the task. ? returned Mr. Spenlow, with a gracious smile, you have not known my partner, Mr. Jorkins, as long as I have. Nothing is farther from my thoughts than to attribute any degree of artifice to Mr. Jorkins. But Mr. Jorkins has a way of stating his objections which often deceives people. No, Copperfield. ? shaking his head. Mr. Jorkins is not to be moved, believe me. I was completely bewildered between Mr. Spenlow and Mr. Jorkins, as to which of them really was the objecting partner. But I saw with sufficient clearness that there was obduracy somewhere in the firm, and that the recovery of my aunt's £1,000 was out of the question. In a state of despondency, which I remember with anything but satisfaction, for I know it still had too much reference to myself, though all was in connection with Dora. I left the office and went homeward. I was trying to familiarize my mind with the worst, and to present to myself the arrangements we should have to make for the future in their sternest aspect, when a hackney chariot coming after me, and stopping at my very feet, occasioned me to look up. A fair hand was stretched forth to me from the window, and the face I had never seen without a feeling of serenity and happiness. From the moment when it first turned back on the old oak staircase with the great broad balustrade, and when I associated its softened beauty with the stained glass window in the church, was smiling on me. Agnes! Apostrophe, apostrophe, I joyfully exclaimed. Oh, my dear Agnes, of all people in the world, what a pleasure to see you! Apostrophe, apostrophe, is it, indeed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said, in her cordial voice. I want to talk to you so much. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said one. It's such a lightening of my heart, only to look at you. If I had had a conjurer's cap, there is no one I should have wished for but you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Agnes. Well, perhaps Dora first, apostrophe, I admitted, with a blush. Certainly, Dora first, I hope, apostrophe, said Agnes, laughing. But you next. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said one. Where are you going? Apostrophe, she was going to my rooms to see my aunt. The day being very fine, she was glad to come out of the chariot, which smelt, I had my head in it all this time, like a stable put under a cucumber frame. I dismissed the coachman, and she took my arm, and we walked on together. She was like hope embodied, to me. How different I felt in one short minute, having Agnes at my side. My aunt had written her one of the odd, abrupt notes very little longer than a banknote to which her epistolary efforts were usually limited. She had stated there that she had fallen into adversity, and was leaving Dover for good, but had quite made up her mind to it, and was so well, that nobody need be uncomfortable about her. Agnes had come to London to see my aunt, between whom and herself there had been a mutual liking these many years. Indeed, it dated from the time of my taking up my residence in Mr. Wickfield's house. She was not alone, she said. Her papa was with her and Uriah Heep. And now they are partners, apostrophe said one. Confound him. Apostrophe, yes, apostrophe said Agnes. They have some business here, and I took advantage of their coming, to come to. You must not think my visit all friendly and disinterested, Trotwood, for I am afraid I may be cruelly prejudiced. I do not like to let Papa go away alone, with him. Apostrophe, does he exercise the same influence over Mr. Wickfield still, Agnes? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Agnes shook her head. There is such a change at home, apostrophe said she, that you would scarcely know the dear old house. They live with us now. Apostrophe, they? Apostrophe, apostrophe said one. Apostrophe, Mr. Heap and his mother. He sleeps in your old room, apostrophe said Agnes, looking up into my face. I wish I had the ordering of his dreams, apostrophe said one. He wouldn't sleep there long. Apostrophe, I keep my own little room, apostrophe said Agnes, where I used to learn my lessons. How the time goes. You remember? The little paneled room that opens from the drawing room? Apostrophe, apostrophe, remember, Agnes? When I saw you, for the first time, coming out at the door, with your quaint little basket of keys hanging at your side. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is just the same, apostrophe said Agnes, smiling. I am glad you think of it so pleasantly. We were very happy. Apostrophe, we were, indeed, apostrophe said one. I keep that room to myself still, but I cannot always desert Mrs. Heap, you know. And so, apostrophe said Agnes, quietly, I feel obliged to bear her company when I might prefer to be alone. But I have no other reason to complain of her. If she tires me, sometimes, by her praises of her son, it is only natural in a mother. He is a very good son to her. " I looked at Agnes, when she said these words, without detecting in her any consciousness of Uriah's design. Her mild but earnest eyes met mine with their own beautiful frankness, and there was no change in her gentle face. "The chief evil of their presence in the house," said Agnes, "is that I cannot be as near Papa as I could wish Uriah Heep being so much between us, and cannot watch over him, if that is not too bold a thing to say, as closely as I would. But if any fraud or treachery is practicing against him, I hope that simple love and truth will be strong in the end. I hope that real love and truth are stronger in the end than any evil or misfortune in the world." A certain bright smile, which I never saw on any other face, died away, even while I thought how good it was, and how familiar it had once been to me. And she asked me, with a quick change of expression, "We were drawing very near my street, if I knew how the reverse in my aunt's circumstances had been brought about." On my replying no, she had not told me yet, Agnes became thoughtful, and I fancied I felt her arm tremble in mine. We found my aunt alone, in a state of some excitement. A difference of opinion had arisen between herself and Mrs. Krupp, on an abstract question, the propriety of chambers being inhabited by the gentler sex, and my aunt, utterly indifferent to spasms on the part of Mrs. Krupp, had cut the dispute short, by informing that lady, that she smelt of my brandy, and that she would trouble her to walk out. Both of these expressions Mrs. Krupp considered actionable, and had expressed her intention of bringing before a British jury, meaning, it was supposed, the bulwark of our national liberties. My aunt, however, having had time to cool, while Peggotty was out showing Mr. Dick the soldiers at the Horse Guards and being, besides, greatly pleased to see Agnes rather plumed herself on the affair than otherwise, and received us with unimpaired good humor. When Agnes laid her bonnet on the table, and sat down beside her, I could not but think, looking on her mild eyes and her radiant forehead, how natural it seemed to have her there, how trustfully, although she was so young and inexperienced, my aunt confided in her, how strong she was, indeed, in simple love and truth. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.